Welcome to Asset Finance Connect's series of podcasts on the European asset finance industry. I'm Richard O'Donoghue, and over the next few months, I'll be chatting to industry experts about the challenges and opportunities facing our industry in 2025 and beyond. All this is possible with the sponsorship of Alpha. So one of the most popular topics at the European Leaders event in Amsterdam recently was AI, and specifically agentic AI. And joining me this day to talk about agentic AI is Allegra Patrizi. Allegra, thanks for joining us.
Thank you to you. I'm delighted to be here.
So you were a newcomer to an Asset Finance Connect event. You attended Amsterdam for the first time. And every time I sort of saw you out of the corner of my eye, you were surrounded by people talking about what you were doing in agentic AI. But I think one of the reasons people really were attracted to you and wanted to talk to you was you have a very interesting backstory. So maybe before we get into what you're doing today with agentic AI, maybe talk a little bit about your backstory and your career history.
Of course. So I've had the most traditional, actually, of corporate lives until now. I started as a McKinsey consultant, became partner, actually became the youngest partner they've ever had at 29, then went into corporate life, and I started at Prudential, the Pru, as the Brits would call it, spanning between Europe and the US. At the time, it had very big operations in the US. Really learned the skills of the trade, and then moved on to become the CRO, the Chief Risk Officer, of the Aegon Group. The Aegon Group is the ninth insurer in the world, or at least was at the time. And that started a fantastic moment of my career, really understanding all about risk management and how do you deal with risk and how you turn risk as an enabler of business. And then what happened is I became the CEO of the Aegon Netherlands part. Now, Aegon the Netherlands is about 40% of the Aegon Group, and it's the equivalent of the mothership of the group. That's where the whole group was started. That was a very exciting moment, one where we really led a massive scale transformation. We turned the bank that was in Aegon the Netherlands as the only digital, fully digital bank at the time in the Netherlands, and it became the fourth bank of the country. It's called Knab, behind such colossus as ING and ABN AMRO and Rabobank. So a fantastic achievement. And that was really the start that got me thinking about digital AI and everything we will talk about. And then I decided to go into a bigger country, and that was the UK, and in a slightly more dynamic sector, banking. And so I became the successor to the CEO at Virgin Money. Until, unfortunately or fortunately, whichever side you look at, it got acquired by Nationwide, which meant that it was probably the right time for me to step out of the Nationwide Virgin Money setup because the circumstances were so different versus what I had joined, and actually start going into this AI endeavor that we will talk about.
Perfect. And I mean, I guess, you know, sometimes circumstances lead to people changing their direction of their career. And you had strong foundations, as you mentioned, in insurance, in banking. I liked where you said a more dynamic industry being banking. I think some people might disagree with that. But why, you know, did you decide, I'm going to go in a completely different direction rather than just doing what you knew already?
So what happened is while I was at Virgin Money under my leadership, we won in 2024 the award for best application of AI in financial services. And that was against, you know, some of the very big names in banking in the UK. So that really triggered me. And I thought we're doing something right. I think we have really taken this question about how to bring AI in business, in any business, from the right angle. And that angle was really care, dare, share. That's the philosophy I bring to every leadership task that I have. And essentially, it means really caring about what customers and employees want, need, go through, really understanding their pain points, really understanding the friction. And then daring to bring new solutions, daring to bring new tools, daring to make the choices. And then sharing means really sharing the learning, understand from your failures and your success, and making sure that you bring the conversation forward. So what happened is, as I was, you know, as I was operating in that environment, although we had won that award, I also realized that in the executive committee, the leadership was taking a lot of decisions on a lot of digital tools, but without necessarily really having the hands-on knowledge about AI, because in reality, nobody had it. Even the expert barely had it. And so I thought, as I got this opportunity to take a break, I thought, let's use some of the time of this break in order to really get into the nitty-gritty, into the hands-on, and really understand what AI can and cannot do. Because, you know, there is this magic belief that AI is going to be the answer, be it all, do all. And in reality, it's not. And so I wanted to really understand what it could and couldn't do, so that if and when I go back to executive life, or maybe I just continue with this entrepreneurship because I'm really finding it very exciting, well, I will know much better what is it that one can do. And that is the start, I think, of real progress.
Where do you start? Because that's the big question. I mean, you said, I want to learn more about AI, what it can do. What did you do?
So you're talking to somebody that in December couldn't code two lines in a row, right? I was an engineer, so I had a vague idea what a computer was, obviously, and I had even been CTO in my life. So, you know, I had even decided on very large budgets for very large enterprises. But if I'm honest, I couldn't code. And so I started by saying, let's create a little application. I was a bit spurred in doing that by my son, who said, Mama, what about we created an application together? But little did I know that very quickly it became, why, Mama, don't you create a little application on your own? Because I, little boy, need to study, and therefore, yeah, you're on your own. And so literally, I went to the net and said, you know, start coding. And
Did you use one of the AI tools to say start coding?
I started with, basically, my son said, Mama, start with the simplest, which is just to start making a simple website and then scale up from there. So I did that. I went to Wix and I went to Babble.io and I used those AIs, and I actually did create some very simple websites. But then what I realized is that with those tools, because it's all prompt-based, you know, the first iteration is absolutely extraordinary. But as soon as you go into the second iteration, you start correcting, and you only want to correct, I don't know, the color of that little line and the shape of that little drawing, well, the prompt is not sufficiently precise. And then very quickly, your entire website gets redesigned entirely. So I thought, this is too little control. So that was already the beginning of the learning, which is this completely no-code tools, actually you have very little control. So I started going into slightly more control tools, somewhere you would have pieces a little bit like Lego, and you start putting them together. One of them is called Adalo, and that's what I use. By the way, I'm not sponsored by any tool of any kind. And so I used that one. And little did I know that I created this application, which is now public. It's called Claridora. And it's fundamentally a repository of all AI developments for senior leaders in a way where if you give your role and your sector, all these AI developments are targeted to what is relevant for you as a senior leader in your role and your sector. And it's summarized. And so it takes out all the hype and the noise that we tend to have around AI and really goes to very actionable, targeted insights. And that was the beginning of it all. And next to it, I also created another two applications. And so very quickly, I found myself running out of hours in the day because I was a one-person business with three businesses, actually a small group in a way. And so I thought, I need to find a solution. And that's the moment I got the idea of creating a whole executive team, because after all, I've been a CEO, so that's what I'm used to.
Yeah.
But in that executive team, in which we're five, there's only one beating heart, and that's me. All the others are agentic AIs.
Okay. And you better describe what they do and, you know, what are their functions and how do you create them?
Okay. So basically, there are four. And there is a CFO. His name is Fofai, because F-O-F, A-I. And then there's a CTO, Totai. There is a chief marketing officer, CMO, Momai. And then there is a chief legal officer, Lalai, because I needed a woman. And in Italian, A is for a woman. So that's okay. Basically my executive team. And basically, what did I do? I actually defined roles for each of them in the frame of my application. So, for example, Momai has as a role to create all our external publication. So it's the LinkedIn posts, it's the newsletter. Totai runs all the research teams that find some of the articles that I need for Claridora. Fofai runs all my subscription and the financial part of, you know, my accounting, those type of things. And Lalai has helped me put together all of the contracts that I need, for example, around privacy, for example, around GDPR, in order to be on the Apple, on the Apple Store, in order to make that application. So, and how did I go at creating them? Well, fundamentally, I thought, let's define exactly what they need to do. Let's, for example, take the chief marketing officer. And then for each role, so let's say write a post, I gave Momai the instruction of how you do things in our company. Our company is called Silver Stripes Ventures. So how do you do things in your company? So I had to write a brand brief. I had to write a how-to guide in our company. What's our culture? How do we do things? And I coded all that, fine-tuned the AI model that is used, and then created in NA10 and in Make.com, which are two tools in order to create this agentic AI. Basically, I created the whole flows. And I've actually wrote even a how-to guide to agentic AI to explain it in greater depth. And exactly to the question of that you said, how do you do it? A lot of my sort of, friends in leadership position that are roughly my age and therefore a bit shy in asking how to do things and slightly shy in going to watch a 22-year-old boy with the tools on YouTube explaining you how to program God knows what, they basically asked me, why don't you start a little set of trainings? And so last Thursday, I've created my YouTube channel, which is still very sparsely populated, but will increasingly be populated, where I'll go through exactly how I went at it, how I thought about it, and how you go from who you are to actually having end products that reflect who you are and fulfill a certain number of beliefs and how-to guides in your own little company.
And if we take Momai, so I'm now on first name terms with the chief marketing officer. You know, I obviously see quite a lot of your postings on LinkedIn. I get the Claridora newsletter comes to me. But does Momai respond to, say, the number of impressions on LinkedIn, the number of likes? In effect, I'm asking, does Momai learn?
Yes. So once a week, Momai goes through all the statistics of everything we've written, and updates and proposes some updates to the guidelines that he needs to follow. And in a way, so Momai is very interesting because in reality, Momai is made of 11 little agents. It's not one person in reality. Because what you notice is that if you only have one big brain, it starts going on a limb of its own, let's put it this way, on a tangent of its own. So what you need to do is you constantly need to have two brains that challenge each other. So for example, for a post, Momai has a under sort of a sub agent that creates the post, proposes the post, and then there is an assessor of the post, which is a different brain. And so what you see, and then there is a coordinator, and what you see is that the post keeps on going a little bit like a ping pong ball between these two until it fits the guidelines to a level of 90% more in on a scale of several criteria. And then on a weekly basis, these three little brains and me look again at all these guidelines, look at everything we've learned, and sort of update and improve the criteria. So progressively, you see that these posts are becoming more effective. But also, as my beliefs change, because in AI, things change all the time, and as I, in working with large companies and all sorts of of customers, I'm adapting some of the learnings on that I have in AI. So I adapt the beliefs, and so also the content adapts with it. So it's very interesting. I've created this little group of, as I say, 11 sub-agents within Momai that constantly are proposing. But nothing goes through if I don't approve it, because at the end of the day, it's the most important thing in AI is that the human remains the judgment and remains in control. That is how you get something really original and really good. It's a little bit like the human gives the frame of a painting and AI does the coloring. You don't want to do the contrary. You don't want to dumb down the human. The human needs to be in the lead.
And I think, I mean, this is a concern that people have about AI generally, and even more so, I would suggest, with agentic AI. So maybe just talk about what role you still play with, you know, Momai and his executive team and then all these sub-agents. You know, how involved are you on a day-to-day basis, on a weekly basis? What's the role of a human in all of this?
So, as I said, I've been CEO or quasi-CEO twice in my life. And what I've learned is that even an executive committee, even with very talented people, at the end of the day, needs a chef d'orchestre, an orchestra conductor, right? Which is basically somebody that, and it's usually the CEO, that allocates the task, gets the input, and then helps in deciding how that task is has been fulfilled and how we take it forward. And so in a way, I do exactly the same thing. That's why I call them CFO, CTO, CMO, etc. And so essentially, I'm involved with them every day. There is a famous LinkedIn post where I'm actually talking to them by WhatsApp, because that's how I give instructions. And I talk to them every day, and nothing goes out, exactly like in a real company, if I haven't seen it. In a real company, anything of importance would be seen by the executive committee. So, of course, in a real company, a post is not something of importance, but at the scale at which I'm operating, that is something of importance. And therefore, it goes through my little executive committee, and once I give the okay, it goes out. So I'm interacting with them several times a day, every day. And then every week, as I said, we have some strategic reviews, and on a monthly basis, even more in that strategic reviews, on each of the tasks that have been assigned or each of the types of tasks that have been assigned.
And do they interact with each other, or do you have the typical organization of silos?
So I haven't created an organizer among them because I am the organizer, but each one of them is made of about 11 to 12 sub-agents. And those little sub-agents, yes, they interact with each other all the time.
But not necessarily across functions.
No.
Maybe this is the new business idea for you, Allegra, a agentic AI that breaks down organizational silos.
I think that's a brilliant idea, and I'll get to programming that pretty soon. Very, very nice idea. Well done, you. I'll have a deputy CEO. So I'll have Dodai.
Yeah, maybe I won't be replaced by agentic AI. I might still have a couple of years left.
And now a quick word on our sponsors, Alpha. Last year, Alpha released Alpha System 6, the latest version of its software platform for equipment and auto finance, covering origination, servicing, collections, and more, and supported by sophisticated tooling. Intelligent automation in Alpha System 6 unleashes agentic AI, autonomous digital agents that predict, decide, and act in real time. They can help you streamline credit checks, customer queries, and complex workflows, unlocking major efficiency gains, while you stay in control. Visit alphasystems.com to learn more. That's alphasystems.com.
There was something you said earlier as well around your son helping you with this. And it kind of brings me into another area. And it's very topical because we had a podcast recently with Carmen Aina, who talked about her son being very critical to some of the things she did in her career, you know, giving her that motivation. And one of the things we touched on as well with Carmen is some of the skills that people will need in this world of AI and agentic AI are skills around maybe communication, empathy, etc., which arguably women are better at least historically. I'm just interested in your perspective, if you feel that, you know, AI is a field that actually women could be very well represented in, perhaps relative to the rest of the world of technology.
So it's very funny you mention it, because exactly that event in Amsterdam you were talking about, I was discussing with Carmen exactly this topic and the influence of our respective sons on, you know, the turn of our careers. So very interesting. But back to your question, yes, I absolutely think that women in general, but basically anybody that has empathy, can actually find really its footing in AI. I'm writing a book at the moment that is called Care, Dare, Share, Lead and Thrive with Heart, Mind, AI. And the central thesis, if you want, is one of saying, look, if you want to run a large-scale transformation today, you cannot avoid AI. It will come and play some role, exactly like digital does play a role, and you cannot avoid it. But what is very important is that you don't go at it for AI for AI's sake, but that you actually start from really caring. What are the pain points? What are the needs? What are the reasons why your customers and your employees need from you, right? And then from there, you can start thinking what the solutions are to their needs, as opposed to basically pushing AI tools just because it's nice and shiny and all of that. And I think in that, people that are empathic and often even women tend to be quite pragmatic about what could be needed, and an understanding that behind a name, behind a client or an employee, there's not just a number, there's not just a profit number, there is actually a human. There is a mother taking her children to school. There is a guy buying a new car. There is anything. There is a human with their families, with their struggles, their dreams, their aspirations. And you need to connect at that level to then be able to solve their needs. And that's where then AI becomes a tool in that vision, as opposed to a scope or a purpose in itself.
And I guess those are hard skills to learn, some of the skills that were being asked. And historically, some of those skills were not welcome or are not valued in the corporate world. So it's going to be very interesting over the next 10, 15 years, how perhaps skills that were underutilized become the critical skills to have in this agentic AI world.
The other day, somebody asked me in an interview, what's the one thing you would advise any leader to have? And I said, heart. Start with a heart. Starting with a heart, starting with understanding, starting with connecting, will actually be a better driver of what you need to do than a lot of the past approach, which was only to go rational at it. Of course, behind the heart, you put a lot of data. But start with a heart. Start by understanding what your customers and what your employees need. The rest will become pretty self-evident.
It's interesting, and perhaps a topic we can come back to at some point. I think there's a whole podcast in that. I just want to, you kind of alluded to it, but if somebody's listening to this and maybe they're in the same situation as you are, where they're looking at a career change and they're thinking, AI, I'm interested in this. I wonder what I do next to get going. What sort of things would you say to people to get started?
Don't be scared. It's like cooking. Take a bit of flour, take a bit of water, take a bit of salt and do a loaf of bread, right? Don't be scared. So I would say start by prompting. Start by doing some very simple things. Take 4 or 5 different LLMs and prompt the same question. You'll see. You'll realize that these LLMs, these large language models, actually have a personality. They answer differently. Start by trying to make a very simple automation, like sending an email in make.com. Try by watching 1 or 2 of these simple automation YouTubes. Try to go hands-on. And trust me, in the beginning, you'll bang your head against a wall because it's full of jargon and it's not completely clear. But as soon as you start playing with the sand in your little sandbox, you will actually very quickly get the hang of it. And at that moment, it will open up a much deeper understanding of what you can and cannot do, of what those things that people are talking about are. To give an example, there are many companies where people only have one LLM because of cybersecurity concerns. And whenever those CEOs talk to me, I say that's a very big mistake, because it's like you're using Johnny from accounting in your marketing creative system, in legal, and in, I don't know, sales, right? Obviously, you're not going to use the same Johnny from accounting in all of those functions. You'll get people that are a bit more creative in marketing and people that are more outgoing in sales, et cetera, et cetera. So this is exactly the same thing. You very quickly need to develop an intuition, even basic intuition, if you want to lead in a better way.
I was smiling when you said they all have different personalities, and you've explained really well why we should use different LLMs. And I was speaking to Richard Houston from Vamos at one stage, and he recommended using Claude. And Claude, for anyone listening who hasn't used it, it always sort of says to you, good afternoon, Allegra, or good afternoon, Richard. And I started replying as in, good afternoon, Claude, like human kind of basic interaction. And I remember saying this to Richard and speculating, did I get a better quality answer because I was polite? And he looked at me like an engineer would and just went, you're crazy. Of course not. So you do get sucked into their personalities a little bit. It's very difficult to avoid. A question I asked Richard, and I'll ask you as well, when he did a podcast earlier in the year, was in your personal life, kind of leaving aside maybe the business aspects of it, do you use AI, and what's the best use you found for it?
I use it all the time. And I use it, as I say, to color the frames, not to create the frames. So I'm publishing every week, for example, this newsletter, Claridora. And it started really making the rounds. I have by now more than 1,000 readers. And what happens is that a few weeks ago, I've started having board members, chairmen, CEOs phoning me to have a discussion about AI. So all of a sudden, my diary is full of these discussions at C-level, executive level, and at the same time, bringing AI together. And so I keep on going to these companies, showing how you actually use your brain as a C-level executive to design a transformation. But then you can use AI to build up some of the underpinning pillars that you will need in that transformation, to create some of the material, to create some of the themes. But you as a leader need to remain in charge. You should never delegate it. You should see AI as a uber-talented, uber memory, uber arrogant junior. And with all the advantages and disadvantages of the three adjectives I've just used. And so use it to execute on certain aspects, but certainly never leave it to design your entire company or your entire life. It's a doer, not a thinker. Take it as such. And always make sure that you have fail-safe mechanisms around it.
Great. And you mentioned Claridora there. And thank you for sending it over on a weekly basis. Or I guess you don't. One of the agents does it. But, you know, you obviously, I guess, read some of those articles as well that Claridora recommends. If you sort of look back over the last 3-6 months, is there anything that you would say that's, you know, the number one article, or that was the most insightful, or I learned something completely different from that article than I would have expected?
Yeah, so let me answer that in a second. But before, let me clarify one thing. So in Claridora, the agent that does a lot of things is called Torch, because it's like a torch looking for the right articles across the web. And actually, Torch looks for the articles, proposes those articles to me, summarizes them, identifies the insight, but I review every single one of the insights, okay, because it does take that C-level experience that the uber-talented, uber-memoried, uber-arrogant AI tool will never have, right? And so then now back to your point. I see thousands of articles and I review the insights of thousands of articles. But I think the ones that to me are the most important are the ones that explain and argue that 70% of any transformation in AI is the success of it is due to people. If you don't take people on your side, if you don't make people enthusiastic, if you don't make sure that you've designed your AI tools for people, with people, your entire transformation is just going to fail. There are other important things like data readiness, et cetera, but at the end of the day, it will all be as successful or as unsuccessful as the enthusiasm and the alignment, the engagement that you have with people. And there are many, many articles that I put in my newsletters about that. I wouldn't quote one specifically, but I think that is the one part that whenever I talk to board members and you know executive committees, etc., I say don't underestimate that. This is not a chief technology officer or a tech team issue. This is one that needs to come from the business, start from the business, and take all the specialties in your company along. Otherwise, you're going to have a fantastic thermonuclear toaster that nobody wants to use.
I like the thermonuclear toaster. That's something I will use again. What I also like, though, is, you know, if you think of all the, you mentioned before that you worked for McKinsey's and you go back to BPR, business process reengineering, total quality management, all of these things that used to change every couple of years, but were fundamentally the same. They all came down to people. And their success or failure depended on people. And I guess AI, even though it's a brave new world, is not really any different. It still fundamentally comes down to people being able to see use cases, to accept that those work and to see the value those bring rather than being afraid of it. And I think it's a good note on which to end that the positivity about there will be a role for humans. You're showing that that role exists today. You're still, as you say, providing oversight to these arrogant agents, which I like that terminology. So Allegra, it was a pleasure meeting you in Amsterdam and equally a pleasure just talking through this a little bit more. And hopefully our listeners have learned a little bit more about agentic AI and how they can be put to use in a practical way.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. And for those that want this How to Guide to Agentic AI, they can find it on my website, allegrapatrizzi.com. And that's also where I will put the videos that I'll start developing. I really enjoyed it, Richard. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to explain a bit more about this. And I look forward to many, many more conversations with your listeners and, you know, with the community.
Hopefully we'll see you at future Asset Finance Connect events. Thank you very much, Allegra.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Asset Finance Connect, sponsored by Alpha. Something that I really liked about the European Leaders Summit in Amsterdam was the number of new attendees. Allegra was one of those, and everyone who met her was fascinated by her story and how she'd built a business with four AI agents. As she pointed out in our podcast, the only difference with her past life is that her reports are AI agents rather than people. Allegra's experience offers an example of how we can all leverage AI. If you've enjoyed this podcast, look out for future episodes in the coming weeks and feel free to suggest topics or ideas for future chats. Thanks for listening.